Welcome back to the Skits and Giggles podcast. I am Pascal, chief instigator of this show and your host. I'm joined by my co-host and our resident engineer, the yin to my yang, the Rudolph to my Grinch, Bryson. How's it going today, buddy?
Oh, it's great to be back, Pascal. How are you?
I'm really, really well. This is going to be episode 30 of the Skits and Giggles podcast. That's about 27 and a half episodes more than we thought people wanted to listen to. How are you feeling about that?
Really excited to explore podcastum. How are you feeling about it? So it's been a while.
Well, it's been a while. And I think we've... I think one thing that we've learned from all of this is that there's a lot of great stories. As we set out from the beginning, there's a lot of great stories out there that need to be told, that we want to hear, and that we can help facilitate. And with that, maybe, you know, what was your favorite story this year, or one of the favorite stories?
Well, we had a hoot talking with Remy and Gianluca. They had just actually come back from a trail ride, like right before recording with us. So they had like, you know, still like a high going on with like, you know, all the skits and giggles and hoot and holler. And they did. And, they had a really funny like story that happened just to them that day. So it was, yeah, the energy came right through the headphones. So for me, that was a big one.
And, but yeah, I mean, of course that has been, a theme that has followed on. I mean, we spent quite a bit of time with that crew. So yes, in person at some of the races, but also with some other members of the team that's behind the Swiss Enduro Series. I'm thinking of Nick Vicky, which has also been one of my favorite episodes. That's for sure. You know, just because I like racing and kind of what goes into it, both from an athlete's perspective, but also from an organizer's perspective, and what those guys are thinking about and what it takes, and of course Zermatt at the time was a pretty challenging event, and it was cool to hear, like, you know, all the thoughts that went into the event in the end.
Pascal, you had the pleasure to meet these guys, but I didn't. So one thing that I'm kind of hoping for my next year is trying to get to some of these SES, Swiss Enduro Series races. They offer this really cool feature where they allow youngsters to race. And hopefully I can do a little bit of volunteering, helping out maybe somebody who needs a race partner to kind of chaperone them. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's the format is a fantastic idea. It's having spoken to quite a few, let's say, other parents, you know, because obviously I'm still a couple of years removed from my kids potentially racing in the SES if they ever want to. But other friends of mine, actually other guests that we've had before, that have asked me about, like, look, you know, my kid is 14, 15, 16. He's interested in trying out some enduro racing. And, you know, do you have any recommendations? And of course I was like, hey, you know, just hit up the SES, have a look at the website. I mean, they have this great concept of this chaperoned, I think U15 and U17s. Or U15 is chaperoned and U17s you're riding on your own. So it's all built around the development of the younger riders, and therefore there's more categories that are catering to that kind of age groups, so U15 and 17, and then the regular U21, and then of course the flip side to that is that there's only the open categories for the older riders, but that's totally fine. Although I actually in the end at the Legendtal one, which was an EWS qualifier, they there was actually a master's ranking in the end for the EWS qualifying points.
Yeah, I'm not sure about getting any points myself. I'm not so much of a fast guy, but I think I will be able to keep up with some from 15-year-olds. I mean, not all of them, but some of them.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And you know, and it's a as much as helping out and you know, calming the nerves and giving snacks and know, some encouragement than it is about going fast. And because even the ones that we've been talking to, they, you know, the dad has been riding behind, if I understand it correctly, and the two twins, they've been racing up front. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's necessary that you need to be as fast or faster than the young whippersnappers, but you just need to be there to help out if something goes wrong. I think that's the rationale behind it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on the topic of racing, after we did some recording with Lucy, it was, you guys went and did a little bit of racing side by side. So how did that come across, or how did that end up?
Yeah, I mean, that was, I think, one of the highlights of the year. Actually, post the podcast, that's been one of the coolest stories, I think, of the year, is because, you know, it's one of the first episodes we recorded. We were talking a lot about overcoming fear and learning new stuff and confidence and things like that. And then, you know, you had this vision when you listened to that conversation of kind of like, oh, it's kind of a relatively, you know, newish rider or someone that's kind of scared of the consequences and all these kind of things. And of course, we both know Lucy relatively well. And it was cool to see when she showed up for the first SES in Lenzerheide, you know, had a blast at the race. And then the funniest thing is actually a fun story, is that a friend of mine was supposed to come to Finale to race the EWS and the EWS 100. And he had to cancel relatively last minute, and reached out to a couple of friends to ask if anyone's interested, you know, just to join so I don't have to drive on my own, or, you know, in case something happens, it's always good to have someone around to help out to get you back home or you know, whatever it is, or just not spend the time alone. And so I also asked Lucy, and she was like, oh yeah, I think I can make something work here. And 2 days later, she was like, yeah, I'm in. And I signed up for the EWS 80, and I'm also going to race. And I was like, oh, wow. And yeah, and then she did the EWS 80 race. Also a long day, like the EWS 100 was. And yeah, and she got third in the end. Or second in the end. So it was a fun story. So she's not slow at all, and a confident rider, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always enjoy riding with Lucy. I don't get so much time to do that now that I'm not living in Zurich. But yeah, some of my fondest memories of Zurich was hitting up the Baroma rides on Wednesdays after work, and then having a beer together, and of course the fabled Baroma weekend in the Reschen Pass. Which is where I got to see her this year again, outside of the Skits and Giggles ride, which was a stormer. But yeah, it was fun. It was lots of smiles and laughs and good times.
But yeah, so. I mean, for you, what were the kind of the highlights that came out of the podcast? Because of course there have been a few, and there's been a few fun things, few storylines I think we wanted to share today. I think that's the plan for today. So yeah, what was your highlights?
Highlights? Well, gotta say the kind of like the outtake or like the casual conversation that we have before and after recordings was what made it really kind of exciting for me. Like doing a podcast, recording a podcast and preparing for it and stuff, it has its own kind of electricity and excitement, but just having these conversations and then like kind of just having outtake kind of conversations after where you're laughing about what was said or just other stories that you don't want to tell in the recording, getting to know these people. It really makes it for me. Yeah, I like having that connection. So that was really nice. Otherwise, a big highlight was that we organized a Skates and Giggles ride. And so we knew all except one listener who is one of the people who are around the Baroma ride people. And then we also met for the first time Karen, who we had. Let's see here.
Episode 20.
Episode 20. Oh my gosh. And so it was the first time for us to meet her in person. Very sweet and charming lady. We all rode in a storm. Almost gave up after the first lap. But then I kind of, I don't know. I think I had a combination of like pouty face and like super excitement. And it kind of confused everyone enough to like all agree to go on the second lap, which was the Super Bruni lap, as I dubbed it. And it's basically a root carpet top to bottom with a couple grassy turns connecting them. There was a snapped crank. There was an endo by me. I lost my glasses. You're
also the only one without a rain jacket.
Yeah, but I was warm.
That's what counts.
It was a little bit unbelievable, actually, the way the weather came in, and then everyone just like zipped up instantly, and I was like, oh, I'm okay.
Guess they read the weather forecast.
I can never trust those guys, though. You know, it's just have it like in me. I just can't trust it. But anyways, I fared very well considering that I had no jacket, so it wasn't a big deal for me. And I had a change of clothes and a towel.
It was all good in the end. That was good. That was good times.
The stoke was keeping me warm, honestly. It was just everyone's, you know, giggling and chatting, and we were all watching each other like hit a corner and slide out, or just like have to walk one section and just slide on our butts. It was, yeah, lots of skids, lots of giggles. That's how we like to do it.
Exactly.
Can't wait for the next one, really.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Next year is, we need to definitely put one in the books again.
Mm-hmm. And we got more people to ask.
Exactly. The more, the merrier. Mm-hmm. But looking back, we're kind of, those 30-ish, well, 29 episodes to be exact. What was your key takeaway? Kind of what did you learn from the podcast?
Kind of a personal aspect. I've been working through some of the fears of podcasting, I guess, or just the personal fears of podcasting. I'm really happy that I've been able to continue rolling onto episode 30 and speak and collaborate with you, and just keep going, and I'm still stoked to keep going. So that's really a big accomplishment for me. What I learned from the numerous people we had is things, you know, along the lines of responsible manufacturing, alternative manufacturing technologies, what it's like to be a free rider, a freestyler, what it's like to plan, build, and maintain trails. You name it. Like we touched on so many aspects of mountain biking. I mean, in Switzerland, but also mountain biking itself, which is alive in Switzerland, I guess. You know, like it all goes in together. And, you know, we even talked about 26-inch tires. Like in this day and age where everyone says like 2.6 is dead, like we just brought it right back and, yeah, I mean, I'm still rolling on too. I got a set of tires. So it's like, it's really cool. It kind of enriched my life. I think I could say that there's a lot of things that are cyclical. And a few years ago, I fell out of mountain biking. Like I didn't have a working bike anymore. And I stopped. And then about 2013? I got back in. I got a decent hardtail, and then I started upgrading again. I got the Fever, got back into it. And then I don't know what it was, whether it was, you know, the pandemic or moving or kind of like just whatever it was. I hit almost another plateau or kind of like a lull and came back down again. But what I was able to do is supplement all of the non-riding I was doing with these amazing conversations with all these people from around Switzerland and even further. And yeah, it kind of just kept me at a level where I was like, still felt like I was mountain biker when I wasn't mountain biking so much. And that probably brought me a lot, let's say.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I mean, that's it's also, you know, what keeps us going. I mean, yes, this podcast is a child of the pandemic. I think there is no doubt about that, but it was a cool project, or it is a cool project, and it's a cool routine to keep going and to explore all these questions that we have on our mind and all the topics that we like to explore and you know, just go off on tangents if we want to and dive deeper and speak to, you know, manufacturers if you want to, or maybe, you know, guides or pro riders or whatever it is. It's just what makes it interesting and it keeps it fresh and obviously leaves us a lot of artistic freedom to pursue whichever avenue and rabbit hole we want to pursue, and I think that's what we wanted to achieve.
Mm. Pascal, did you have any big surprises this year in regards to the podcast itself or some of the guests we had? Something that surprised you or, you know, caught you off guard maybe?
Well, I think I in every conversation we had, there was something where I had to say, really? Huh, I haven't thought about this that way. And I think that's what made it so interesting and that makes it so interesting to keep pushing on and to kind of pursue these stories is you know, every time there's this moment where you're like, huh, I haven't thought about this. Maybe I should think about this. So I guess, you know, picking out a few, there is, you know, let's take the topic of trail building. Of course, that's pretty present at the moment because of everything that's going on with the cycling boom and where stuff is being built and businesses are thriving, and of course there's the other side of that which we've also covered, but there's the notion of, you know, the sustainability in trail building and how do you make it safe and sustainable for a lot of riders and high traffic trails and, you know, trails that are expert trails and how do you make an expert trail and you know, what goes into all of this. So that's all the questions that I thought, like, oh, okay, I haven't properly thought this through myself yet. Or the discussion we've had with about Pembry, about sustainability and transparency in business. And of course, I mean, yes, there's a lot going on in that sense, and a lot of the burden of being more sustainable at this stage is put on the consumer, right? Because at the end of the day, bike companies still want to sell a product, and they're trying to sell you a product which is more transparent and more sustainable. But at the end of the day, you as a consumer, you still make the choice to buy a new product, and per definition, that's not as sustainable as keeping the one that you already have, and, you know, that's still functioning perfectly fine. So, but I think just thinking about all of these approaches, and then, you know, for example, also if you think about carbon, or if you think about different alloys, and, you know, is this a forward-looking standard? Of course, we had a discussion about standards, but, you know, is a 30 mil axle, is this something that's going to be around for 10 years? Is it worthwhile to invest in a set of cranks that are forever cranks, for example, like the E-wings, or some other durable, nearly indestructible cranks, right? So, you know, from cheaper alternatives from Shimano or SRAM, or there's, of course, pandemic-driven, there's a lot of small independent manufacturers that are thriving right now. And it was actually pretty refreshing to see that these guys can deliver. So I, you know, found Ingrid this year, and I've been running their cranks this season on one of my bikes, and they've never had any issues with wait times. You put in the order, and 2 weeks later they show up at my door. It's straight from the factory in Italy. If you want to buy a set of Shimano Diore cranks, and, you know, the estimated delivery date at this stage is somewhere around April to May next year, and we're at beginning of December. So that has been some pretty eye-opening conversations, and I mean, again, you know, as I say, from every conversation there was something to take away from. So from, you know, the discussions with some of the athletes that we've had on, to some of the trips we went on to Karen with her remote working life, which I thought was really, really cool. And obviously that's something very foreign to my own work life. So there's been a lot of cool stories that I took a lot away from and I learned from.
I learned a ton too. This whole, like you said, the where it's manufactured topic, really kind of brought it to fore to me. I've never been the kind of person to like favor manufacturing, like kind of like onshore or anything like that, until having these conversations. And then I took a little more conscious effort into this. And so, you know, because I've heard the argument as well that, you know, having manufacturing from, let's say, China or wherever it is also good for the economy to have these sort of trades and things like this. But actually, I recently found myself in a like a big brand chain, looking at different items and realizing, okay, well, I'm going to choose this one, which is slightly different, yeah, because it comes out of Spain or Portugal. So it's, you know, I mean, it's not coming so far to Switzerland, but it's better than buying the alternative that's coming from an even further distance because of the whole pollution, right? So just one aspect that I'm choosing to care more about now that I have a better understanding from these conversations. On that topic, actually, what are some products this year that you really favored for yourself for in your mountain biking?
I think one of my back-to-back favorite product in mountain biking is also the year before, and the year before was the 1UP 100cc EDC pump. That has saved my life more than once. I have it on all of my bikes, just because I'm not very good at moving it from one bike to the other. The premise of it is pretty simple. It's, as the name implies, it's a 100cc pump. It has good volume. It's pretty sturdy. It has room for 1UP's EDC tool system. So that means it includes a multi-tool. It includes the chain breaker, tire levers, chain links, and even space for either plugs or gummy bears, very important, snacks. And the most important thing is it can do double duty as a short-range weapon because it is pretty sturdy build.
Oh, yeah, that's burly. Yeah, all aluminum build, right?
Yeah.
And you could buy like a replacement gummy or seal kit for it, I think, on demand.
Yeah, exactly. And actually the head... The pump head, you can use it as a for CO2 cartridges if you want to use that. Personally, thinking about sustainability and rubbish in the forest, which obviously is a personal pet peeve of mine, is, you know, if you have the choice between carrying a pump on your bike and CO2 canisters, please bring a pump and leave the canisters at home.
Right, or an EDC tool, and you got both.
Exactly.
That's versatility.
How about you? What has made your mountain bike life 21 on the product front?
It's quite run of the mill, I'd say. I got a Dior rear derailleur for my 10-speed trail bike. Yes, you heard that right, 10-speed. I chose not to go to 11 or 12. Instead, I stuck to a typical... 90s spec 10-speed, but it's a good 10-speed. It's just the bottom line Dior, but you know what? It is without a hitch. It just shifted all the time. I'm very, very happy with it. Typically, I'm not the kind of guy who runs a XT or XTR. I'm probably usually going for the SLX level, but I had no problems going with Dior because it just... Like the new one just looks good and it works as good as any derailleur I've ever used. So really happy with that. I got also a Garmin Edge, and since I've relocated and also have a new job, which is in a different place than I've been before, I used this as my tool to explore, as the name says. I got to know the surroundings, and this is one of the big things for me, because that's what cycling originally brought me, that created the impression of what cycling means. So for me, it means exploration, freedom, and my ability to exercise that, to go places, to see new places. This fulfills this whole fantasy of like being a cyclist. It's what keeps me going, keeps me motivated to continue to do things, continue to explore and find different places and be like, have you been there? And like, you know, at lunch or on the weekend, talk with people like, oh, I was here and then I went over that hill and blah, blah, blah. So typically I get a flat there. But anyways, those are two products directly attached to my bike. The other one I gotta throw it out there is I built myself a little bit of a bike cave, just enough to like store my bikes, have a decent workbench, some racks to hold like parts that I pull off my bike while I'm rearranging bits and tickling, and incorporating a small 3D printer into the whole outfit as well, kind of has upped the game a little bit. But yeah, I digress.
Oh, nice, the 3D printer. I mean, I've seen it in person, but I've seen only a few examples of your work so far. What has been the experience so far? What has been the main challenges?
Right now I'm more wrapped up in creating a safe and functional enclosure for the 3D printer than I am 3D printing things. So I've printed, since you've seen my failed examples, I've printed a few successful examples. One being a topology optimized brake caliper from the University of Zurich. Some of the students there in the department put some model online, and I 3D printed it, and it's kind of like organic looking, kind of like alien, you know. And then I've also done this another topology optimized Christmas ornament, which I gifted to a friend in glow in the dark. So it's a pretty cool ornament. Yeah. the enclosure actually back to my roots as a machine designer, it just harks back to that, where I've like just engrossed myself in creating the box that goes around the machine, because the box needs to like have its own features. So I won't go into the details, but I really geeked out on the whole having this like super feature rich box. So it's going to be like sit in the corner, totally prepped, ready to go. I'm going to try to automate it. And
all right, I think the 3D printing space is really exciting, especially since there's now a couple of really good options for consumer levels, and you know, you can do all these small little things from, you know, whatever brake caliper covers and custom cable routing and whatnot, so custom pump holders and stuff like that. So there's quite a few things that you can make, and then obviously also always for your own bike, always for your own stuff, only for your own needs, and that's really cool and really empowering, really. And unfortunately, I'm not as talented enough with these things. I need to throw myself into like the AutoCAD and the slicers and all these kind of things, but I guess it can be learned at some stage. But you already mentioned the tickling. Of course, we've actually done quite a few times now, the last few episodes, we've reached out to our listeners on our Instagram, just to throw out a few questions. If you guys want to hear anything special, what do you want to hear? Anything you really are wondering, how does it work? Who are we? Why are we even doing this and all that? So, of course, our dear friend Yeti, one of our first guests. Of course, at the beginning, we mostly invited our friends that we know really well, and they were kind enough to help us out with a good story. But he wants to know, because of course he's been present at quite a few rides this year, what was the major tickling realization of 2021?
Well, I'll speak for myself because I know you do your own tickling. My major realization is that I don't actually know what I'm doing.
Oh, really?
But that's the fun of it. It's the soul, like, you know, change a little thing, figure it out. But it's always mixed up with the other variables of the bike, as well as the fact that your body and mind are already, like, programmed or used to adapting to its environment. So if my shock is running too fast, somehow my body is compensating it, maybe by bracing too much with my shoulders or whatever it is. And I can almost not tell. I mean, or I'm just dealing with it kind of subconsciously maybe. So maybe I should stop. Should I stop tickling?
No, that would not be you. But yeah, it is. It's sometimes maybe just tone it down a little bit.
Well, I promise much. To always do it like on a transfer or halfway down a run. I won't give that up.
Okay. Well, that's my
trademark. Did you have any tickling realizations?
I've been, we've talked about it, on one of our solo episodes. So where we didn't have a guest, we talked about my grip experiment.
Yes. Your grips.
So I've done extensive testing with the Renthal ones, the ultra tacky ones. I tested some others, the long necks and also the Chromac ones, the wax. But those are like this waffle design, I believe, as it's called, with these, it feels a bit mushy. I didn't quite like it. The conclusion of the whole experiment is that I went back to lock-on grips. not necessarily because the intuition with the more rubber is more better, did not hold up. It's more because in my experience, just because I'm not a good enough rider and I fall over and, you know, my bike goes somewhere else than I go and stuff like that, is that certainly the ultra tacky ones, and in combination with the wires to seal the actual grip from having any water under it or something like that, is not very robust. So if you hit a tree, for example, so you cut a tree a bit too close, then the rubber catches on the tree and then it rips. And then once it rips, then it starts disintegrating, it starts twisting and all that. So that wasn't too great. And there was one of the races this year where there was an instance like that, where the grip ripped and then it started twisting and then it wasn't too great. And then after that, I went back to lock on grips. I went to, round shaped ones, some grips that have a little bit more padding, under the palm, and some more grip strips on the other side where your fingers are gripping the handlebar. Some ODIs, I believe. They seem to be quite okay so far. But yeah, so there's the trade-off between durability and lack of talent and robustness in terms of just being consistent throughout the different applications.
For sure, I'm a fan of the robustness factor. That's a big one for me in mountain biking. Because, yeah, as you said, sometimes you go into the bush. Sometimes you're having it off and you just want to make sure that you can get back on the bike and you're not going to have to keep changing and maintaining and fixing. And, yeah, it's more fun to ride, I think. I mean, my perspective.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I prefer spending more time on the bike riding than fixing. So that's why I decided in the end it was not worth the hassle. We had some more questions that are not necessarily podcast related, but we're just gonna go through those. That's okay. There was one question about e-bikes. We've talked about e-bikes. I know we talked about e-bikes before a couple of times. And Dennis, he wants to know, he said, you guys talked a lot about riding e-bikes and that all of us will be riding e-bikes soon. Why are you not riding one? When will you guys be having one? Bryson?
Me? Oh, okay. I like e-bikes. I'm a fan, actually. I don't have one yet. Why I don't have one yet is because I guess I'm just kind of preoccupied with all the bikes I do have. I mean, I've got kind of pretty much one for each discipline, including road and BMX and blah, blah, blah. So this kind of fulfills my need to bike. I have been thinking about getting a speed pedelec. So these are the e-bikes intended for the road, or yeah, as a commuter kind of thing, or like a urban solution, which go up to 40 kilometers per hour. I've tested one a couple times to work and back, and it's a blast. And it's also really nice to just get a ride in, and then I took it on kind of a detour one time and saw some parts of the country that typically wouldn't go, just because it's not like anywhere directly from A to B, like if I were taking a car or a train. And that was really nice. And kind of like along those lines, I was thinking of maybe building my own, or maybe getting one and adapting it more to how I want to ride it. Not meaning off-road as a mountain bike, but as a kind of an all-terrain, maybe, like just something that I can take on like gravel bike paths, or where you're allowed to ride your bicycle that aren't pavement, just because there are also a lot of places in Switzerland that have that, like up hills and in forest areas and stuff. So that's really cool. If we're going to talk about mountain biking, I've always kind of dreamed of an e-bike that is light enough that it doesn't feel like an e-bike, but I don't have a ton of experience with trail mountain bikes. So I guess I could... Here's the great thing, is that the world of mountain biking and e-mountain biking is expanding so greatly, so fast, that it's like, okay, anytime I'm ready to dive into that sector, I can go gangbusters nuts, like diving deep, figuring out all the specs, you know, watt hours, torque, battery size, everything that you could like pretty much narrow down or like expand as much as you want into like what you would consider ideal, and then try that and be like, no, I need more power, and like, no, I need more torque, or I need more tire clearance. And yeah, you can just go nuts into the whole realm. Cause it's as huge as it's huge, or maybe huger than mountain biking itself. I don't know. What do you think? You gonna get an e-bike soon?
I don't think soon. I think it's, what I don't understand as a not engineer and a not industry person is that, why do e-bikes, because they're obviously very different from a real mountain bike, why do they still try to look like a mountain bike? Why do I still have to deal with derailleurs? Derailleurs are not great. I mean, why are we not having gearboxes or something smarter than that? Why did it take 100 years to come up with a super drive, as we've recently seen? Absolutely love it. Do I think it's the solution for the majority? Probably not, but it looks really cool. I think it's we're not quite there yet. This is like the beginning of a long journey, and I think e-mountain bikes will find its niche. The interesting thing I find is the notion of the chairlift in your garage. So, you know, it's like a self-shuttling device. That's an interesting notion. I also like the notion of the light e-bike, where the weight delta is very small to, let's say, a normal trail bike. So, you know, the most expensive version of the specialized ones or the Orbea ones, or you know, that are like 16, 17 kilos, smallish battery, a little bit of support, that are just enabling some even deadlier death rides that I already enjoy on my normal bike. But as it stands, I'm still fit enough that I can do those death rides on a normal bike, and I continue that until I can't. So, because that's kind of part of the challenge of mountain biking for me, is kind of this whole fitness aspect and being able to do it under my own power and get myself out of trouble, with the bike, be it fitness wise or being able to fix it when something goes wrong, even out in the, let's say in the bush. And that's just not necessarily a given with an e-bike at this stage. But yeah, it's an interesting space, and I continue to watch it. I don't think we want to go into a complete rabbit hole here. But yeah, it's an interesting development that's happening, and I think it's going to go in two separate ways. So mountain biking, the acoustic version, will go one way, and electric will go a completely different direction, with more integration, more enhancement, more augmented everything, and hopefully some cool spillovers into acoustic mountain biking too. I mean, some of the stuff is already happening. I mean, personally, I'm a big fan of e-mountain bike specific brake pads, because they cost half of the downhill specific ones. They last like three times as long, and the brake power is like maybe 5% less, if I could even measure that. So that's my example of something great that's come from e-mountain bikes. Galfour Purple, by the way.
I think the 220 rotor also kind of sprung from that, and the 38 from Fox. It's like, I don't know. That's my perspective, is that, you know, they made all these hugely overbuilt pieces that, e-mountain bikes. But yeah, it's, so in conclusion, Dennis, I don't ride an e-mountain bike yet because it doesn't have enough gravity. And Pascal?
Because that's too much. Right on, then we have some more questions, actually also an equipment related one. Chris Rabo, the godfather of Swiss slopestyle, or one of the godfathers.
Hey, Chris.
He wants to know what Bryson's winter tire choice is.
My winter tire choice was a great recommendation from Biet at Biroma Bike Shop. It is the Maxxis Shorty. And so I went front and rear shorties, but I mixed them. So because I have a mixed wheel trail bike, I did a 29 by 2.3 in the front. And this is actually like the previous generation shorty, the narrower version. And then on the rear, I have a 27.5 wheel, and I went Cush Cord, 27.5 by 2.5. So it's the wide trail version of the shorty. And they have a noticeable, girth difference, but they handled superb, and they are my go-to winter tire. And since we didn't have so much of a summer, they were also my rest of the year tire. So we rode a couple of monsoons and just like sloppy landslide type of situations in them, and they held out perfectly. It's a good winter tire. I mean, depends on what region you're riding in, but how about you?
Oh yeah, I mean, here is Zurich, shorty is a good choice. As you say, I mean, it depends what kind of winter riding you want to do. Here at Zurich, of course, very, very muddy. A lot of clay. So you want something that is clearing really fast. So an open tread design, and you want something with decent spikes. Personally, my view on this is heavy mud tires are great training for the winter. If you can find some in downhill casing, preferably with a wire bead, that's the best option. I found myself some Dirty Dans a couple of years ago in downhill casing wire beads that weigh 1.6 kilos each. And that's the basis of some good summer form and fitness. Basically any good mud tire will do. Again, it depends where you do ride. I have done in the past. I've done some snow stage racing, cross country. It was interesting, the range. I always, at the time, went with a more down country setup of a narrow minion combination, which wasn't the smartest choice because it was super slushy and you would have been much better off with wider tires, higher volume. Of course, you could have brought a fat bike if you wanted to. I didn't have one available. In the snow, I guess the mud spikes would also work pretty decent. If you're just riding down. But apart from that, I would combine mud spike with high volume, and there the shorty is a very good option. We have another equipment question from Chris, but this is a bit more podcast related. He was wondering, because we have in our closeout questions, we have the magic dropper post, and he wanted to know, what were the best magic dropper post ideas? I think maybe let's extend it to what were the best magic dropper post ideas and maybe the best skids. What were the highlights from the closeout questions for you?
Magic dropper post. I really liked how people were so into dropping hints on how to improve your riding. So whether it be having confidence, or going out and practicing like jumps or like skids or whatever to kind of like just get your confidence up. For me, that was impactful because I think it's something that everyone could do is like improve their confidence and improve on themselves. And it's something you have the power within yourself to do, something I believe and something I believe I can bring to my game. That resonated with me. And yourself?
Well, like you, I mean, I really like the notions of, there's always something you can work on. So yeah, jumps, is something I have to take on myself, for example. I suck at jumps. But also, yeah, it's going out and practicing turns and doing, certain drills, technique drills, dedicated practice, as you call it. So that is a good one. Just have more confidence. Yes, that's easier said than done. But the confidence comes from doing something over and over again and the steady progression. And, once you clear one obstacle, you build on to the next, and that leads to a progression. And then that is, of course, that process that makes this sport so addictive for so many people, right? Because that's from something that you observe all the time, especially now at this stage when there's quite a few people coming into the sport, they start off with the simple things of, stupid example, riding up a curb, and then do the first roll over a log, and then the first bunny hop over a log, and then the first log slide or whatever it is, and that's that steady progression that keeps going, and that somehow kind of came through all of the answers of the magic dropper post, and I think the question of what makes a great skid is just funny because, some people take it serious, some people don't take it so seriously. There's like very technical answers. There is some that are very lighthearted, and something that is when you talk about it sounds kind of weird for someone that's not in the sport, but for someone that's been in the sport for quite some time, that's kind of like, exactly what he's talking about, so it's quite funny. I think we keep those going, and I think it's we should make a highlight reel of all the different answers, like put it up as separate episodes or something.
Game. Okay, but I know out of those skid descriptions, which one do you like the best? It was one of the more recent ones, just from your reaction to it. So the quote is, so here's a little game. You tell me who said it, and maybe we'll do a couple. So the quote is, "I like those Scandinavian flicks," and I think this is the one that you,
Robert. Vain Bicycles.
Yeah. So you resonated with that one. You were like, yeah.
Yeah, Scandi is nice.
Okay, my favorite one was, okay, you guess who it was. Get that milk out of your tire and then everything is great.
That's a hard one. I think it was either Dario or Jan Kadosz, I guess it was.
Yes.
Because it's, The milk, the tire milk is kind of a literal German translation, because in German, the tire sealant is called Dichtmilch. So they're kind of literally sealant milk. So that's kind of easier to spot those. But yeah, I think it was Jan Kadosz, I believe.
I think we had milk said about 3 or 4 times. And then which also came up quite a bit was berm. Roost was said often. Okay, here's another one. Take the inside line, destroy this berm.
Robin?
Oh, close. This was Lucy.
Okay.
And actually, I had to contain myself when she said it, because I was like,
there you go.
I didn't expect her to say, destroy this berm. I was like, yes. let's see. Some other notable ones. I really loved the accent this one was spoken in. Lose your beans.
Was that, it must have been Greg Jolliffe.
That was Greg Jolliffe, that's for sure. Yeah, that was awesome what he said. He's just lose your beans. Okay, yeah, so casually,
there's
like
some nuggets in there.
I'm just gonna shred this berm, lose your beans. Okay, one more. We're gonna close out. This one's probably instantly recognizable because we mentioned it just a moment ago, so it's fresh. That was one big skid right into a cave.
Gianluca Honi. Yes, because they were out riding for the day with some other friends of the racing scene, and apparently he sent it with a big skid off the trail and right under a rock into a cave, and had to look for his way out with the light of his phone, and happily made it out of the cave again, and everything was fine in the end. Enough of looking back, I guess. How about we talk a little bit about next year and what the plans are for you personally when it comes to riding, and what are you looking forward to with the podcast?
Well, quick look back. We did interviews in English. You tried them in Dutch, Swiss German, with our English recap together. And then we also had one-to-one conversations, like ride reports and kind of these kinds of things. Looking forward, in terms of the podcast, I just want to keep going. I want to explore more ways for us to communicate to the world. We're going to have some more different guests on. Try to expand our horizon in the whole scene around Switzerland and maybe further. As for riding goals next year, I want to jump back on my single speed. I got it set up right now with some knobby nicks, and I got a Chromoly rigid fork on it. So it's going to be like sort of like party in the woods BMX with Cushcore type of deal. I don't know what to call it. I don't know. Just something strange, like always. Like single speeding is. Also want to do a little bit of racing. So you kind of inspired me. Also, we spoke to some people in the Swiss enduro scene, and yeah, it's just got me inspired, especially that what I spoke about before is chaperoning the 15-year-old racers. So for me, I grew up doing many volunteer, doing a lot of volunteering. And it's just something that's inside of me that I feel really passionate about as well. So I'm going to try and get on that with the SES for some of their stops, hopefully all of them, see if I can fit them all in. And progression goals.
Now the skits and giggles ride.
Oh, Yeah. I mean, I wanted to have another Skids and Giggles ride before the season closed out. I guess things just kind of rolled on without it happening, but it was always the intention to have two, because, you know, there's only so many people that can show up to the first one. So I just want to try and accommodate the rest of them. But now we have a huge roster, and hopefully if I set the date ahead in time enough, that doesn't correspond with some fantastic event that's going around. I mean, not the pandemic. I'm talking about like fantastic mountain bike events that are going around in Switzerland at the moment, because it's just, they're popping up everywhere, whether you're a mountain biker, a cyclocross racer, or gravel rider, or whatever. You know, there's just a plethora of things to do and ride. So I'm going to try and find a date, hopefully get some more people out. Mandatory skid, mandatory giggle. And yeah, I mean, this is going to be another season highlight for the next year's recap. Definitely. What else are we doing in 22, Pascal?
Well, I mean, you know, we've been going for 30 episodes, and we have 30 episodes worth of data, and, you know, started digging into that data a little bit for the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it turns out that our reach is a bit bigger than we thought originally. According to Spotify, we are listened to in over 30 countries, and yeah, most of those countries don't speak German. So, and we also have received, you know, quite a few really, really, really cool messages from around the world. People listening to episodes, and just saying how that resonated with their local scene and their local issues. For example, you know, trail building was one of them, where the you know, the feedback was really good, and from a broad international perspective as well. So yeah, I'm open to maybe we always said, you know, we're a podcast about mountain biking, and we like to explore the little stories that make the sport so great. And we're based in Switzerland, and that's what we want to spend most of our time on, but that doesn't mean we have to spend all of our time in Switzerland. So yeah, I have a couple of ideas, a couple of friends from abroad that there could be some interesting guests. So watch this space. We'll see if we can bring them on and share some really cool stories about mountain biking.
Sounds like there's a lot of potential.
For me personally, the plan is relatively simple. I have a spot on Trans Madeira for the summer version. So they've, you know, grown the race to such a successful venture that they're now selling out two versions in 1 year. I've had my spot since 2020, of course, because of the pandemic at the time that was postponed. And then last year there was some other things that I couldn't go, and then I postponed it again. So now I'm going in 2022. All things allowing pandemic and such. And yeah, I'm looking forward to getting out for rides, meeting up with you in person, because, you know, behind the scenes nugget of information, we have, the two of us have never done a podcast in person, apart from the first one that we never showed to anyone.
Do not.
And we'll, you know, spend some time up on the mountains doing silly stuff, skits, giggling, and sharing good times with friends. And, you know, apart from Trans Madeira, maybe another stop of the SES or two, maybe another marathon, some death rides.
A solstice ride, I think it's on the menu.
Yeah. Well, there's actually one of the highlights from 2020 was not an Everesting. It wasn't an Everesting, because Everesting is silly. Because who wants to spend like 20 hours on a bike? I mean, I love riding a bike, but not 20 hours in one go. So I had the idea, let's tackle the altitude of the Matterhorn, but not in an Everesting format, but more in a looser format. So rather than going up and down the same road, we were doing that on the local hill here in Zurich, and just going up one way or the other way or different ways and taking all the different trails down. Of course, it rained for like 2 weeks straight, so it was like super sloppy. A crash on the second run, and destroyed my Garmin and tore my shorts, and it was not a great start to the whole proceedings. But at the end of the day, it was a cool event. There was a couple of people that came out for it, Bryson included. Chaita from Viroma came out, Dennis and Jean came out. There was a whole bunch of other people that were following along from further away a little bit and sending messages of encouragement. And I had the glorious idea to do all of that on a 17 kilo enduro bike. For those of you that don't know, Matterhorn is well over 4,400 meters in vertical, which is still a decent amount of climbing on the bike that is not quite as light as others. But you know, one of the rules I set out for the event was to bring whatever bike you want, but don't complain about it. And I stuck to it and stuck it out on the enduro bike, even with double down casing, to make it extra special. All right. Well, there is one more thing that we wanted to talk about before we close it out for today. As some of you may know that have listened from the very beginning or that have visited our homepage from time to time, Bryson and I, we have set ourselves a little fundraiser goal throughout the year. We called this initiative Stutz and Giggles. Stutz is the Swiss-German dialect word for a franc. The idea is pretty simple. We just set out to set ourselves a small goal of 10 francs per episode that we set aside. And at the end of the year, we're going to decide what we're going to do with that money. We invited our guests to join in. We happily matched their contribution if they wanted to be extra generous. And we're happy to report that we've collected a total of 1,300 francs and still counting because we're still selling some of our stickers. We just put up our new water bottles on the homepage that you can now order online or buy them in the store at Biroma. The organization we've decided to donate the money to is an organization called Velafrica. I know their work. Check out their website under veloafrica.ch. We hope to have one of their communications guys on at some stage to talk about their work. And just wanted to let you know this is what we've done. And we were pretty stoked that we got that far. We stuck to our goals, and we can hopefully make a difference through the power of the bicycle, which is what we set out to do at the beginning. Before we really wrap it up for today, we have one more important question. And it's not often that Bryson gets asked by a World Cup downhill racer what his favorite dessert is.
Cheesecake, 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 cheesecake every day.
A special kind of cheesecake?
Yeah, my mom is, she's a whiz. So she makes this super creamy, thick cheesecake. Actually, I like it just kind of natural on top, baked, of course. But she makes the crushed crust of Oreo cookie. And that's a delight. Thank you, Mom. What's your cake?
Yeah, I'm also a big fan of the home-baked cakes, also from my mom. but yeah, joking aside, I guess one of my favorites is a cake that my mom makes. It's called the Mississippi cake. It's a chocolate cake with chocolate fingers on the inside. And if she's really going crazy, it's also with chocolate glazing on the outside. And the best thing, what I used to do when I was younger and, you know, consuming thousands of calories, was to, when the cake got older and dried out a little bit, so during the week after the weekend when she made the cake, was put Nutella on it before the rides. And that was the real fuel for some big rides. And I still do that to this day. All right, but before we let you guys go, let's just briefly do our spiel with the social and where you guys can find more information about the Skits and Giggles podcast and the new water bottles. We're currently most active on our Instagram, where you can skit right into our DMs and follow along at Skits and Giggles. And you can find our website with all the relevant links and info under the URL skitsandgiggles.com. Also, if you guys like what we're doing and want to know what's up, just give us a follow on Spotify. Hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you listen to great podcasts. Speaking of Spotify, there's actually an interesting data point I wanted to share. And, you know, some of you that use Spotify, you know about the Wrapped at the end of the year. And the more interesting one for us, because it's the first year we do a podcast, there is also a podcast Wrapped and for podcast hosts. And one of the coolest data points I found is there is over 100 guys out there that listen to podcasts. And they also listen to our podcast. And the Skits and Giggles podcast is the podcast they listen to most often too. And I think that's a pretty cool data point. Anyway, if you enjoy what we're doing, you like, you know, the stories we share, and you want to share that with your buddies and writing friends and all that, share our episodes on your socials. You know, give us a heartfelt 5-star rating wherever you listen to our podcast, and it helps us reach even more cool people and potential guests the further down the line. With that, we close it out for this year. We wish you happy holidays, and we talk to you again in the new year. Bryson, thanks for your time as always, and I'll talk to you soon.
Hey, pleasure.
Cheerio, buddy.
Feliz Navidad and adios.